RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 910 The Fan.
Bring the energy!
It's happening.
Run for your lives.
It's time for MP on the mic.
Cunning, capable, agile, flexible.
It gets me pumped and it gets me going.
Michael Phillips is...
Let's go!
MP on the mic.
Tuesday morning, what is up, Richmond? 10 o'clock, around the River City. Michael Phillips, MP, on the mic. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours. We'll hand things off to AWOD Radio, noon to 3. Grant and Danny will drive you home on The Fan. We'll get into the Washington Commanders, what they're going to do with the number 2 overall draft pick, and a little grenade thrown into that discussion yesterday with Tom Pelissero of NFL Network saying he talked to some general managers around the league who think the Commanders might take J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, a name we haven't heard yet in this discussion. We'll break that down for you in a minute. Of course, we got lots going on in the world of sports. Shohei Ohtani talked yesterday with a new translator this time, says he was the victim of massive theft. We've also got gambling allegations in the NBA, gambling everywhere. The Washington Wizards on a 3-game heater, the Capitals with a big game tonight. And I want to wrap up the Virginia Tech women's basketball season as well. But we start with men's college hoops, and we start with the news yesterday. James Madison lost its coach, Mark Byington, to Vanderbilt. New contract at Vanderbilt. He leaves after the Duke's most successful season in 11 years. And I think this was somewhat inevitable for the Dukes, but still speaks to the reality of their situation, the reality of what they did as well, right? Pair that with Danny Sprinkle at Utah State. I was there for 1 year, filling in for Ryan Odom, goes off to Washington yesterday. Time for another coach there at Utah State. It's a tough world when you're in that mid-major level where the coaches don't know, is now the time to cash in? Is next year going to be available to me? Right? Mark Byington had to ask himself that question. JMU, if they had lost in the Sun Belt title game, would have had 31 wins and would not have made the NCAA tournament. That not only would have set a record for most wins to not make the NCAA tournament, that would have smashed the record for most wins to not make the NCAA tournament. Nobody's won 30 before and not made the tournament. But they're given the 12 seed. The 12 seed says that means that he would not have made it. He was below that play-in game line, would not have made it if JMU hadn't won that one game at the end of the year. And you remember, it was a tight game with Texas State and the Sun Belt semi. One shot doesn't fall, one thing goes differently. They're not dancing, he's not an attractive candidate. A great season at JMU without the NCAA tournament can get you to a slightly higher level, right? It can get you a job, it can get you the Drexel job. It can't get you the job at Vanderbilt. It can't get you to the SEC. And that's the reality of the Dukes and where they are. And that's not fixable. That problem's not fixable because they made their conference move for football. And I don't think they did the wrong thing. If I was Jeff Bourne, if I was JMU Athletics Director, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have chased the football money and the football prestige. They're in a fantastic landing spot for football in the Sun Belt Conference. They're going to have a shot at that automatic bid into the college football playoff every year. They're going to play meaningful, important games against Appalachian State, against ODU. against Marshall. You saw the lineup this year. JMU football's never been better. The basketball in the Sun Belt, and not everybody takes it as seriously. And kudos to Mark Byington for what he did with the program, what he was able to do turning it around. Tracy Wolfson, CBS sideline reporter, sent out a nice note on Twitter yesterday after he took the Vanderbilt job, said she was really impressed by the way he ran the team, the way he kept the team together and united, right? You don't get that national praise every year. He could have an even better team and an even better season next year. None of that's guaranteed. So it's hard to blame Mark Byington taking the job off to Vanderbilt, but the way college basketball teams are built, right? Look at this JMU roster. It wasn't homegrown fourth-year, fifth-year guys. There's a lot of transfers. It was a lot of recruiting done by Mark Byington. And just like Ryan Odom here, the new coach in Harrisonburg is going to have to assemble a team and assemble a team on a little bit of short notice as well. Now, I will say one thing JMU did outstanding in this process. Right before the conference tournament, they signed Mark Byington to a contract extension, right? We always talk about how those aren't worth the paper they're printed on. Well, in this case, they raised his buyout to leave for a Power 5 job from $500,000 to $1 million. So Vanderbilt will have to pay JMU $1 million to get Mark Byington out of his contract, lure him to Vanderbilt. I think that's a tremendous win for them, obviously. Gets you a great head start in your hunt for a new coach. And Jeff Bourne, one more job for you on the way out the door, right? Announced his retirement earlier this year, then got to hire a football coach. Now gets to hire a basketball coach on his way out the door as well. I certainly trust his judgment. Last time around, they invited Craig Littlepage, longtime Virginia athletic director who's got ties to the world of college basketball, was a college basketball player, invited him into the search committee. He was the guy who found Tony Bennett back in the day for UVA. That one worked out all right for UVA. I think he will be involved with the search as well. His firm has been contracted to be involved in the search. So JMU, start with $1 million. Go find yourself a basketball coach. Great arena, great fan base. I think they'll be able to draw well. First name that came to my mind, it was Robert Jones, Norfolk State coach, who's had tremendous success, has been unable to get a look, right? Call him the Eric Bieniemy of men's college basketball. Tremendous success at Norfolk State. Spartans are always right in the mix, always at the top of the MEAC, always contending for NCAA bids. Hasn't gotten a look at anything bigger yet. I'll be very curious what the interview process looks like for him and whether he gets a look there at JMU. Sounds like Griff Aldrich of Longwood is not interested in the job, which makes sense, right? I think this is a tougher sell than JMU football. People tripped over themselves to be the JMU football coach. I don't think people are going to trip over themselves to be the JMU basketball coach. It's a one bid league, right? That's the issue. That's the stalling point. Ryan Odom doesn't have this problem at VCU. If Ryan Odom takes VCU on a tourney run next year, wins two games, makes it to the Sweet 16. I think he's probably gone, but he doesn't have to be. He can also come back and know we're going to the tournament next year too. We're at a place where in the A-10, I'll be on national TV all year. I can wait and pick my spot. Shaka Smart did that, waited, picked his spot. It didn't work out at Texas, but he very smartly waited and picked his spot and ended up in what was a really good landing spot. It didn't work out, but Ryan Odom will be able to do that too if he has success at VCU. Robert Jones, by the way, Norfolk State, he had a great tweet the other day with regard to Old Dominion hiring a new coach. So we got so many new coaches around here. It's time for all these 757 schools to start playing each other again. And not only is he right, it's time for all the Virginia schools to start playing each other again. Whoever's a new coach at JMU, whoever's takes over at these. You got Ryan Odom at VCU. Time for these games to start back up so we can have meaningful November and December basketball around the Commonwealth. Speaking of VCU, they're in the NIT tomorrow night. You'll hear it right here on The Fan. 9 o'clock tip for VCU out at Utah facing the Utes, 9 p.m. Still trying to decide if I care about this one or not. I'm just going to level with you. Still deciding if I care or not. I think if I planted my flag out of the gate, if you make the NIT semifinals, go to Hinkle Fieldhouse, do the thing, I care. That's cool. It's hard for me to get worked up about early NIT games. I watched the last 5 minutes of the South Florida game. Look, it's fun. It's basketball. It's on. If it's basketball, it's on TV. I'm going to watch it. So that's not the issue. But am I living and dying with every point? Not. I prefer that they win to not winning. I generally feel that way. But it's. I think we're one win away from me getting invested in this. If they lose at Utah, I'll shrug my shoulders. I'll be the same guy Thursday morning I was Wednesday night. I won't be pitching a fit on the old radio program. So don't worry about old MP on the mic. He's not going to be sour if they lose. But if they win, I think I'm in. I think I'm in as they go towards the semis and maybe make a run at the NIT final. By the way, VCU, I want to sneak this in because I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Glenn Youngkin, he's the governor of Virginia. He plays for the red team. He's a Republican. He is the VCU commencement speaker this year. I was shocked when I saw that. That feels like a scene waiting to happen. Hazel, I'm not going to get you in trouble, but are you graduating this year? I always forget this thing. Are you going to be at Glenn Youngkin speech?
I will not.
Okay. You're next year. You got a new draw. I'm not going to get you in trouble because you do politics and pints. You got to show your face around all the political people. But I won't be surprised if that turns into a bit of a scene. Just saying. Just an early prediction on the Glenn Youngkin.
I have already seen some things online.
I just won't surprise me if Glenn Youngkin speaking at VCU commencement turns into a bit of a scene. Early predictions from MP on the mic gazing into the old crystal ball. Speaking of
things, that one down. That one feels pretty accurate.
That's a freebie. That's not gambling. That's the free bet right there. Put your spot in the middle of the bingo board. Get your free square. Keep things moving. I don't know. I guess VCU maybe felt like they had to invite him because he's the governor. He's the governor. Somebody on his team's got to be like, "Oh, Glenn, buddy, why don't you go work on your jump shot? Let somebody else walk into that lion's den." Okay, speaking of people who are happy when other people are miserable, right? Things that are a scene. Lots of people were happy JMU lost on Sunday. This caught me totally off guard. Had a Richmond fan text me. Saw some UVA fans on Twitter running their mouth about it. Just about time somebody knocked JMU back down to size. That's insane. That's insane to me. Now, first off, I get where they're coming from, right? JMU's acting like they're full-on UVA or Tech big boy athletics right now. Counterpoint, they kind of are. The football team beat UVA. The football team went to a bowl game. The basketball team's in the tournament. The basketball team scored more than 4 points in their tournament game. I think the case is legitimate, right? They're acting like they're all that and such a big deal. Well, they kind of are a big deal right now. I don't know. Look, at some point they will get knocked down a peg. You're welcome to delight in that. But making the second round of the NCAA tournament, losing to Duke and having your coach depart for Vanderbilt, that's not getting knocked down a peg if you're keeping score at home. All right, we'll get back to college basketball. I want to talk about John Calipari as well before we wrap up the show. I watched a little bit of the Caitlin Clark game last night. The Caitlin Clark game. You would have no idea there was another team playing in that game. That was insane. I'm not sure I've ever seen. I mean, Tim Tebow's the closest comparable we've got. I want to dive into that and what ESPN's doing with its women's basketball tournament coverage. But I've promised Commanders draft pick coverage. I will give you Commanders draft pick coverage. J.J. McCarthy at number 2? For real? For real, for real? We'll talk about it on the other side of this break. It's 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. It's a Tuesday. It's MP on the mic, and it's a day. So the Washington Commanders are making news as they get ready to select number 2. Or will they? In the upcoming NFL draft, they're at the league meetings this week in Orlando. We'll get to the other items because I think the hip drop tackle and the new modified kickoff proposal are both interesting. But I want to weigh in on some real buzz that has developed over the past couple weeks, maybe dating further back than that, but certainly over the last 24 to 48 hours, and probably dating back to his pro day last week, that the Commanders might consider J.J. McCarthy, Michigan quarterback, as the number two overall draft pick. Here's Tom Pelissero on the NFL Network yesterday.
Really interesting, because everybody's always trying to figure out, especially at the top of the draft, what the other teams are doing. When I've had conversations here with executives for other teams who know Adam Peters well, know the situation well, the most popular answer for what they do at number two is J.J. McCarthy. So a lot of drama still to come.
That's a new one. That's a new one on the board, right? You've got the perceived debate between Drake May of North Carolina and Jaden Daniels of LSU. And, of course, you've got fringe people, I'm going to say, who say, take Marvin Harrison Jr., take one of these other players, which I don't put a lot of credence into the theory that that might happen. I think it's far more likely that they trade down or trade back than that they trade or that they stay at number two and take Marvin Harrison Jr., take Joe Alt, or take one of these other players. No disrespect, of course, to Marvin Harrison, who is absolutely the number one prospect, regardless of position, in this year's draft. So don't mishear me on that. He's special, and he's going to be special in the NFL. You just don't take a wide receiver at number two. It's not something you do if you want to maximize the picks you have and the picks you've earned through very, very poor play on the football field for an entire season. Kudos to the Commanders for making that happen. I don't ever want to relive that again. But beyond Marvin Harrison, beyond Joe Walt, the quarterback debate has been perceived to be, is it Drake May or is it Jaden Daniels? And I'm very much on record here. I'm a Jaden Daniels guy. I would turn in the card for Jaden Daniels. I am very much on record here as saying I think they're both excellent quarterbacks. And I don't think there's a definitive right or wrong answer here. I think probably, statistically speaking, only one of the three, and now I'm throwing Caleb Williams into the mix, will end up being an NFL star. Those are just the brutal numbers of taking quarterbacks early in the draft. Adam Peters knows that, of course, from his Trey Lance selection. Everybody around the league knows that. That whoever you take probably won't end up panning out. So there's a cottage industry of guys who like to rag on these guys and say they'll never work out. And statistically speaking, they're going to be right more often than they were wrong. It doesn't mean you don't try. It doesn't mean you don't try to get a guy with your number two pick. Now, I had thought... Drake May, Jaden Daniels, sure, both legitimate picks. Would they trade up for Caleb Williams? I'm not wild about that idea, and it sure sounds like the Bears are locked in on Caleb Williams. So I'm putting that one off the board for now. But J.J. McCarthy has come out of nowhere. J.J. McCarthy had a national championship season at Michigan where he didn't do a whole lot. And now we're in the pre-draft process, and it seems like maybe a little bit of atoning for the past here, atoning for past mistakes. I'll go all the way back to Tom Brady with this, a Michigan quarterback who was underutilized in his position and had his intellect underutilized as well. I think those are both very fair descriptors of J.J. McCarthy and his college experience, right? He talked about that at the combine. He ran the offense and the plays that Harbaugh called for him. That was the system at Michigan, and that's what he was expected to do. And by the way, it was a great system for them because they won the national championship. So you can't second guess what they did. You can say, however, NFL is a totally different game than college football, because it is a totally different game from college football. In the NFL, it's the quarterback trying to read the defense on the fly as you go. In college, the coaches read the defense. In the pros, the defenses are disguised before the snap anyway, so you don't stand much of a chance if you're trying to do it from the booth and relay it down with signs pre-snap to the quarterback. The quarterback's got to do all that. Now, what teams are learning in this pre-draft process is that J.J. McCarthy, apparently, can do that and can do it at a high level. Now, last week, Friday, pro day for J.J. McCarthy, he had a lengthy meeting with the Commanders, also met with the Seahawks and the Patriots at length. The Commanders took him out to dinner. That's kind of the primetime spot. Get to take the guy out to dinner, have extended time with him. It's very clear the Commanders are doing their homework here, and I commend them on doing that, not because I think they'll take J.J. McCarthy, although I don't think anybody truly knows what they're going to do. I think they're running a full-on smokescreen, very similar to the coaching search, full-on smokescreen until the end. I think it's far more of an advantageous move for them because you can't trade to number three, number four, number five, or number six and be assured of anybody right now. If you want to trade, the only place you can be to get the guy you know you want to get is number two for Washington, right? The Bears have tipped their hand. The Bears are going with Caleb Williams. That's an open secret. And Caleb Williams is good enough. The Bears do not have to guard that secret. But for the Commanders, if they can plausibly be linked to Daniels, May, and McCarthy, which I think is certainly the direction we're trending here, all of a sudden you're in a position where if teams want to move up, if they've got a guy they want, they have to come through you. If the Patriots have a guy they want, they have to come through you. Now you control the action and you can play games of can we move back to three or move back to four and still get our guy. Dangerous games to be sure. And I do think they will turn in the card at two for a quarterback, but it frees you up to do those things, right? It's an exciting little game they're playing here where they control the draft after Caleb Williams goes off the board. And by showing interest in J.J. McCarthy, they're doing two things. They're checking the boxes. They're doing their due diligence on J.J. McCarthy, who might be worth just selecting outright. I think it's far more likely, though, they're letting teams know, if you want J.J. McCarthy, this isn't a Patrick Mahomes situation. You can't just hang out at 10 and he's going to fall to you. We might take him. You want him? Come get him at number two. If you're the New England Patriots, you got a guy you want, get up here to number two, make us an offer. We're going to stockpile some draft picks and then leave with our guy. Now, the other possibility there, right, is they have multiple guys they like. This process could end with them liking multiple guys, in which case you can discuss a trade down. I don't love that. I think you got to go with the one you want. This is your opportunity to do it. This is your opportunity to make a pick. All right, let's hear from Adam Peters. He spoke yesterday with J.P. Finley, who hosts on our sister station up in Washington, D.C. Here's Adam Peters, general manager of the Washington Commanders.
It doesn't sound like a long time, but you get a lot of information in that month, and there's still some of the guys we haven't seen still in person. So we'll go out and do that next week, see a couple more quarterbacks, and then we'll do visits with them. We'll do Zoom calls. We'll do a lot of different things. So we're far from our answer.
When you were with the Niners, you were parts of big trades up and big trades back. Yeah. When you look at that number two overall pick, how do you balance the player you can get there versus the haul you could get for it if you're trying to build through the draft?
Yeah, it's a big decision, obviously, but I think just like anything we do, it's about what's best for us, right? So if the best thing for us is to stand pat, then we'll stand pat. But you're always going to listen to all the different possibilities, trading up, trading back, no matter where you're at, pick, 36, 40, 67, 70, 800. So you're always going to look, okay, what are the best things for us? Weigh all the different possibilities and make the best decision you think for us at the time.
Commanders general manager Adam Peters chatting with J.P. Finley, 106.7 The Fan, up in Washington, D.C. We're far from done was the first part of that. We're doing a lot of research on these guys. Now, even if they have a lean, even if they have a direction they think they want to go, again, very advantageous to go to these pro days to talk to these guys, because also you get prime position in talking to these guys. If you're the agent for Jaden Daniels, for Drake May, to J.J. McCarthy, you want to be interviewed extensively by the Washington Commanders. That's great for business. That's great when that goes out on the NFL Network, because it says the team that picks number two, the team that controls the draft after Caleb Williams, is interested in my guy, in what we've got going here. And those things play well down the line as well. Teams notice that and people notice that. And that's good for your guy and his buzz as well. So they'll continue to make the rounds there. What was the other thing you heard there at the end? Thinking about trade number two, we're going to do what's best for us. We'll listen to everybody. I do continue to think they're going to turn in the card at number two. I think that's what's best for them. You talk about building a winning franchise, a consistent winner, all those things. There are a couple shortcuts you can take. And one of them is you have a guy like Kyle Shanahan, a guy who can out-scheme the rest of the league, right? They didn't need an elite quarterback when they had Kyle Shanahan. Now, Kyle Shanahan really would like one at some point. It would make his life a lot easier. But because he's been able to coach at such a high level, they've been able to skip some of that process. I think Mike McDaniel in Miami this year had a lot of that. They've been able to skip some of that process, right? But if you talk about the best ways to build a football team, you're talking about getting a franchise quarterback. It just accelerates the process so much. Adam Peters could build a great team without the help of an elite quarterback. It'd take him a lot longer, though, and I don't know if Dan Quinn's the right guy to lead that team week in and week out. If you get a franchise quarterback, though, pair it with a Dan Quinn defense, now we're potentially talking about something. So always a ton of speculation there. We're going to be talking so much. We're about a month away. The lead up to the NFL draft is on, and we will have you covered here. I'm getting fascinated. I'm getting fascinated by this. The games they play, J.J. McCarthy, the buzz here, bringing him up to number two all of a sudden. I don't think he goes number two, but it's a fascinating wrinkle. It's a fascinating wrinkle for the teams picking 10, 11, 12, 13, who were doing their homework, thinking that might be a viable option. It makes them rethink what they're doing and where they need to trade. Shakes up the whole draft order, potentially. All right, plenty more of that in the coming weeks. Plenty more hoops in today's show. And, of course, we'll hand it over to AWOD Radio at noon. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. Some NFL rules happening today. NFL rule changes. The NFL owners' meetings are coming to their conclusion. We have a few big ones here, and then a news item I'll jump into as well. The new kickoff rule was approved about an hour and a half ago for the NFL. You're going to be hearing a lot about this. This is one of the biggest changes in NFL rules history. So on kickoffs now, the kicker will be the only player standing back where the kick happens. The kick coverage team will go downfield and will stand next to the blockers downfield. The XFL did it this way last year. I know you watched a lot of XFL football last year, so I have to tell you that. For those of you who happen to miss the XFL season last year, the offensive players and the defensive players will stand 5 yards apart from each other, like a schoolyard game of sending people over. Once the kick happens, they'll be allowed to engage to block, and that's designed to reduce concussions because you don't have guys getting a 40-yard sprint head start before they go plowing into somebody. They've only got a 5-yard window there before they go make their block. The other thing, though, to discourage touchbacks are now going to be moved to the 30-yard line instead of the 25 last year, so they'll come out even further. So the goal is to incentivize kickers actually kicking it into the field of play, creating a returnable ball and creating a kickoff return, but in the process of creating a kickoff return, creating a safer kickoff return so that there are fewer concussions in the game on what has long been billed the most dangerous play in football. Now, one change as a result of this: you can no longer do a surprise onside kick. Teams are going to have to declare when they do an onside kick because you'll have to change back to the traditional formation for that. I don't think that's a huge thing. It happens about once a year. It's always good fun when it happens. But on the whole, the surprise onside is not a huge part of the game. Generally speaking, if a team goes onside, there's not a lot of, oh my goodness, like, you know, what will they do? Everybody is confused. What will happen on this kickoff? Usually everybody knows what's coming. The trade deadline was moved back to week 9. It'll actually fall on election night this year, so that'll be a treat. NFL trade deadline and election night. Get your popcorn ready for that day. And the hip drop tackle has been banned, right? So this one's going to be tough for them to legislate. The defensive players are very much come out against this. It's when you grab a guy, kind of jump up and put your whole weight to bring him down. It's a play that creates injuries. It's a play they want to legislate out of the game. I've got no problems with that. I have skepticism they will be able to handle this and officiate this in real time. And they said they'll probably give out fines more than they'll give out penalties so they can look at the tape on it. I don't love fining players, period, especially in a bang-bang game atmosphere. I think taking away their paychecks in instances that aren't fully egregious is generally a mistake, right? There are things that deserve fines, but on-field play is generally not that thing. All right, I want to slide out into the break a touch early here, Hazel. We're going to re-rack Commander's quarterback discussion from the last hour, and then we're going to come back live at 11:30 because I want to do Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech athletes, because I think Liz Kitley's on it, definitively. And now that her college career is over, now that we can absorb it for a day, I saw this online. I think Liz Kitley's unquestionably Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech athletics. We'll take on the rest of that at 11:30. We'll take your calls, 833-804-0910. But first, We promised Commanders quarterback discussion today. We're going to deliver that. Who will they take at number two? And is J.J. McCarthy in the mix? That's on the other side of this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Tuesday morning, 10:33. Michael Phillips, MP, on the mic, talking all things sports. If you miss any of it, grab the Odyssey app. It's free. It's got the rewind button, all that good stuff. We're excited about a lot in the world of sports, but this is... Just saw this from MoneyPuck.com. They do the advanced statistics for hockey. This is the biggest game of the regular season so far. Any NHL teams anywhere tonight. Detroit Red Wings in D.C. to take on the Washington Capitals. If the Detroit Red Wings win the game, they have a 50% chance of making the playoffs. If they lose in regulation, 21.7% chance. For the Caps, if they win, 72% chance of making the playoffs, 44.6% if they lose in regulation, a 27-point percentage swing in playoff odds. If you watch one hockey game this year, you could do worse than this one. Tonight, Detroit Red Wings at the Washington Capitals in D.C. We'll keep an eye on that one. Monster, 27-point percentage. You see that in the NFL sometimes. You see that in college football a lot. You don't usually see that in a sport with an 82-game regular season, and it's not the last one either. Sometimes you get those swings on the last day, but this is a monster game for both the Caps and the Red Wings tonight. Speaking of monster games, I watched a little bit of Caitlin Clark in Iowa last night on ESPN, and I'm not mad at Caitlin Clark because she's not doing any of this, but dang if the entire ESPN broadcast was not Caitlin Clark-centric. I thought I had stumbled onto one of those alternate feed broadcasts that they do where it's just entirely a different angle or whatever it is. West Virginia was actually in this game, is actually a close game with 3 minutes left, and I still don't know any of the names of any of their players. I'm thinking Holly Rowe's going to have to go introduce herself to the coach after the game if they win. We haven't said a peep about them. It's one thing to say, she's Caitlin Clark, she's great, everything's good. It's another thing to plan the entire broadcast around everything she does. It's got, you know, Tim Tebow vibes, I would say. You remember kind of the peak of that, what's he doing? This is what everybody thought the Taylor Swift coverage was with Travis Kelce, right? But it actually is. They're actually showing her 75% of the time during the game. And I think it detracts from a lot of the progress being made. This has been a fantastic women's basketball tournament. It's going to be a really good Sweet 16 and Elite Eight this weekend. There's some great matchups on the board. It's also, I think what we're missing here also is that Iowa team's not the best team in the field. They're not a one seed, and they weren't shafted either. This isn't the best team in the country. Maybe they're just riding this Caitlin Clark thing into the ground, anticipating she'll lose before the Final Four. Got to get all your content out. Got to get all your stories out before then. Sure. But at some point, you got to respect the game itself as well and what's going on actually on the court. By the way, this women's basketball tournament has had some tension. There's been a lot of cursing, a lot of attitude, a lot of intense basketball games. I would say more so than the men's tournament so far. I've been surprised some of the stuff that's happened without ejections, without referees stepping in and giving technicals. There's been, with the added spotlight on this tournament and the number of teams that can win this, there have been some intense games this year. It's going to be fun to watch this weekend. Just dial it back a little. I know who Caitlin Clark is. I enjoy watching her play. I think she's very, very good. I'd like to see the rest of the game too, though. And I'd maybe like to learn the names of somebody on the other team as well. This isn't the Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals here. There's not... I want to hear from both teams. It's the tournament. That's what makes it special. Caitlin Clark flying into Tim Tebow territory here as we move through the NCAA tournament. But certainly, look, a big draw for ESPN. When she plays, people watch it. People watch it. I get why they're doing what they're doing. No word yet from Virginia Tech on the future of Kenny Brooks. He's been linked to the Kentucky opening. Story from Mark Berman yesterday in the Roanoke Times, chatting with Whit Babcock, the athletic director of Virginia Tech, is basically, hey, you know, we'll take care of him as best we can. and we'll see how these things play out. And he says he's confident in his ability to keep Kenny Brooks, which you have to say. You know, I don't think he'll lose by not making a competitive offer. And I think Kenny Brooks has been taken care of well at Virginia Tech. I don't know what kind of money Kentucky plans on throwing around, but it might be in a higher stratosphere than what Virginia Tech's planning on throwing around. That's, they got a bigger decision to make, though, and that's what to do with John Calipari, who would get a $33 million buyout if they were to fire him as coach of the Kentucky Wildcats. Look, I feel your pain, Kentucky fans. It's been a bad 4 years. One SEC tournament game win, not winning the whole tournament. They've won one game in the SEC tournament the last 4 years. One game in the NCAA tournament the last 5 years. Some bad upsets. They need to change the business model, for sure. Bringing in these one-and-done kids does not work anymore in the age of NIL, because the NIL kids are staying for a fourth year and a fifth year, and if they've got the COVID year, they're staying for a sixth year. Now, all of a sudden, you got these 18-year-olds playing against 24-year-olds, right? Jack Golke, the Oakland kid, 24 years old, born in 1999. A lot of this Kentucky team, 18 years old. They're going to go play in the NBA. They are talented. In a one-game tournament, in a one-game environment, it is tough to compete with that poise, that exposure, and what that brings to the table for those guys who have a six-year advantage. They're not a talent advantage. Kentucky's still got the talent advantage, but they may have to change their business model going forward, and they can get into the NIL game too, and Calipari can coach. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's proven that over the course of his career, and he can recruit and he can build a team. I'd keep him because I don't know who you're going to get immediately that's better. I don't know who you're going to get that, you know, is going to come in and give you three seeds in the tournament every year. You've got the Kentucky resources, but $33 million is insane, especially for a public school. I said this when Jimbo Fisher's bought out Texas A&M too. You got people playing fantasy football now. You got rich donors just cutting checks to hire or to fire. We're talking about JMU making a savvy financial decision because they got an extra $500,000 with Mark Byington walking out the door. And now on the other hand, you're talking about Kentucky maybe cutting a $33 million check to a guy to quit coaching basketball. It's funny money. It's got to get reined in. And in a world where NIL money is going to start happening, it's a big deal that you're going to want this money for player salaries that are coming down the line. All right, when we come back, a couple more tournament thoughts. I want to touch on this arena in Alexandria. A little bit of news on that over the weekend. We didn't get to that in yesterday's show. We'll do that, then we'll fire up hour number two. Lots more to come. You're listening to MP on the mic. This is 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Flying up to the 11 o'clock hour, MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM worldwide on the free Odyssey app. Thanks for taking this ride with us. It was a great weekend of basketball. If you missed the big finale Sunday night, A&M and Houston going to overtime, and Grand Canyon forgetting how to play team basketball, Charles Barkley didn't miss it.
Grand Canyon, that was the dumbest game of basketball I think I may have ever seen. Like, everybody went one-on-one. They missed how many free throws?
They missed 17. I think it was 37. So they missed 14. 23 for 37.
Yeah. But I'm not sure what they were doing offensively. I don't think they ran a play the entire second half.
I couldn't dissect one.
And, you know, Gino was doing, Gino said this was the craziest game. I said, if he mean dumb, that was some of the dumbest basketball I've ever seen grown college men.
I'm befuddled trying to figure out what they were trying, because there was no semblance. And I had never seen them play like they played great all
year. They just went one-on-one every single time. Yeah, they didn't run any plays. Yeah.
Five assists on the night.
Five whole assists?
Yeah.
Well, you
32% and 2 for 20.
Hey, let me say this. We got a crack staff and they found five passes.
I just want to say it right now for the record. You can rank this. You can play this back whenever you want. You can make me regret this whenever you want. I like Charles Barkley. I like the studio show. I get the gripes from the college basketball purists, right? I hear it every year. Why do you have NBA guys doing the halftime show for the biggest college basketball games of the year? And I understand that, but I'd like to take that on for a second. One, I don't watch college basketball night in and night out. A lot of people don't. The ratings for the NCAA tournament average 10 million viewers per game. A regular season college basketball game hardly ever breaks a million viewers. Duke UNC will sometimes, in the regular season, sometimes do 2 million viewers. So even off of the most interesting regular season game you've got five times more viewers coming in, right? And they are casual fans. And you need to cater to the casual fans. And I'm not saying dumb it down, and I'm not saying you can't do analysis, but I'm saying these guys are entertaining, and they get basketball. They're speaking the language of basketball, and they're having fun doing it. It's a good show. It's enjoyable. I like Charles Barkley. I like the team. I like Ernie. I like the Jet. I like all those guys. I don't get to watch inside the NBA as often as I'd like, but during March Madness, during the NCAA tournament, I love seeing those guys on my TV, and I love watching them break it down, and I think it's totally appropriate to cater to a casual fan this time. Now, there's pandering and there's catering, right? Pandering is when you do the stupid robots that dance, you know, and with the team logos and whatever. Fox pandered for a long time, right, in their coverage. And pandering is the glowing hockey puck. That's pandering to the casual fan. Catering to the casual fan is giving them what they want. They want to hear about the basketball game. They want to hear about the strategy of the basketball game. They also want to be entertained because it is the world's greatest sporting event. And by the way, Charles Barkley is entertaining, and it is the world's greatest sporting event. I love hearing what he has to say. And you get the sense he truly loves basketball. And they bring in the fan elements, and that doesn't bother me at all, which is good as a host on the fan. So I say stick with it. Stick with Charles Barkley. Stick with these guys. I enjoy what they bring to the table. The other set is a little more for basketball nerds, right? You got Candace Parker there. You got Jay Wright. You got Seth Davis. These guys know their stuff inside and out. I think they do a great job as well. I'm more likely to turn the channel to the Charles Barkley halftime show. That makes me a casual fan. I get that. But you know what? Most of the viewers are. And I thought it was a great presentation of the tournament. Only thing I would change, the Saturday and Sunday tip times. You got to stack more games early in the day. I know why they don't do it. I want more games stacked early in the day, fewer games on top of each other going into late night, because you've got enough room Saturday and Sunday to let this thing breathe. I'm old enough to remember when on Sunday all the games had to end in time for 60 Minutes, which will air in its entirety on the West Coast after the NCAA on CBS. We'll keep an eye on the tournament, keep an eye on the brackets. Of course, AWOD's burger bracket is at thefanrichmond.com, so don't miss that as we continue to slide towards the big conclusion of naming the best burger in Richmond. We'll cross talk with AWOD in about an hour, get his thoughts on a lot of things. He texted me last night about the Caps Wizards, the proposed Alexandria Arena that isn't, and a lot of news stories that have been flying over the last couple days. So first off, over the weekend, you had a Washington Post story where it's a last-ditch effort. They're trying to pair the arena with a new casino in Tyson's Corner, which, by the way, may not have the support to pass either. So you may just be bundling two unpopular things at that point. That to me, was the first sign that the arena's dead, right? What have I been saying for so long? The arena's not dead. He's got legal maneuvering. He's got, you know, a procedural maneuvering he can do. That's the first sign to me that the arena's actually dead. When you make a desperation suggestion like that, you're communicating, you're telegraphing, this thing's dead. By the way, Ted Leonsis had his own Hail Mary emergency plea. He went to Maryland and tried to get them to get in the race, presumably to put pressure on DC or put pressure on Virginia to act. Desperation play. 11th hour desperation plays. You can smell them coming from a mile away. I smell that desperation on Glenn Youngkin. I smell that desperation on Ted Leonsis. And we can have a full breakdown on why the arena did, why the arena didn't work. The other news story was DC threatening to sue if they break the lease before 2047. I put no stock into that at all. And people I've talked to said there's a mortgage buyout in Ted Leonsis. If he has the money, can buy it out and get out of the contract. I'm sure DC would sue. I'm sure they're threatening to sue as a Kim Mulkey style right measure to try to make it not happen. I ultimately don't think that will have any impact on the proceedings here, because look, everybody threatens litigation when things don't go their way. This FBI building, Virginia's, you know, suing over that because Maryland got that. Lawsuits are a part of doing business. Lawsuits are a cost of doing business. I'm sure Josh Harris will tell you the same thing as he gets ready for a couple new arena deals in Philly and in D.C. lawsuits are baked into the cost of doing business. But I smell the desperation from a mile away. Glenn Youngkin, Ted Leonsis, both making desperate moves, right, for the Virginia arena proponents to try to move it to Tyson's along with a casino. Way too late in the game for that. For Ted Leonsis to try to get Maryland into the action, that tells me they don't have a plan, and they don't have a plan going forward. And I'm getting ready. I'm moving my meter down, right? The arena death meter, I'd been keeping it alive. I'd been saying there was even, 15, 20% chance they could get back in front of the General Assembly. They could force a vote. They could make it happen if they got the right people supporting. That tells me they don't have the right people supporting. They don't have the votes lined up. And the laundry list of how they messed this up, including reportedly not having any lobbyists on the ground in Richmond, only sending the Northern Virginia lobbyists down, not understanding how the Virginia Senate worked, leaning on, the votes they counted and not the way the actual system worked, where Luis Lucas was allowed to stop it. And then underestimating Luis Lucas and how much this was personal to her, right? Because there was the news stories at the end from the Times-Dispatch that they had offered her $300 million in toll relief for Hampton Roads and were willing to talk on marijuana. Those were her two items. They were willing to give her what she wanted. She still said no in the end. They misread that situation with her. But the whole thing stinks of desperation right now. Smells like desperation. If it walks like desperation, talks like desperation, quacks like desperation, I don't know the saying. It's desperation. It's not good news for the Wizards and Caps potential arena. It's great news for the people who want to see them stay in D.C. Now, my understanding from talking to the D.C. side of people is they're going to keep their $500 million offer on the board. They're not interested in playing games. And if Ted Leonsis wants that money and wants to commit to downtown D.C., they will play ball with him and they will do that, which I think is the right thing to do in a lot of ways, but definitely not something they need to do at this juncture as well. So we'll keep an eye on the arena situation. And To publicly have that information out there, I think is a stunning admission that this thing didn't go anywhere close to where they wanted it. We're going to take this where we want to take it, which is another hour of live and local sports talk with you, the good people of Richmond, Virginia. We'll do just that on the other side. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM.
Breaking news on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM, powered by Odyssey, is brought to you by BetQL.
Kenny Brooks, the Virginia Tech women's basketball coach who arrived from JMU, led the Hokies to the Final Four last year behind Liz Kittley. Georgia Amore is leaving the school. He will become the next coach at the University of Kentucky. Now, we got to clarify, he'll be the Kentucky women's basketball coach. The men's team is its own disaster right now with Calipari. We hired Kenny in 2016 with the intent of revitalizing our women's basketball program, Virginia Tech Director of Athletics Whit Babcock said in a statement. Needless to say, Kenny, his staff, and student athletes created a culture of excellence on and off the court. We wish Kenny and his family well in this next chapter of our career. I remain confident in the trajectory of our women's basketball program when combined with our resources, specifically NIL. The future of our women's basketball program is bright. First ever Final Four for the women's team last year, put them on the map. Kenny Brooks obviously had been on the state map for a long time before that. His work at JMU, where he was an outstanding coach, got the nod at Virginia Tech and built an absolute powerhouse of a team that really got cheated out of a great moment this March. Liz Kittley injured, tore her ACL in the final regular season game at Virginia in front of the largest crowd to ever watch a college basketball game in the state of Virginia. Fun environment, brutal end for the Hokies, who then bowed out of the ACC tournament and lost to Baylor in the round of 32 on Sunday. Easier said than done for Whit Babcock. So we'll react on both sides here. We'll start with the Kenny Brooks reaction. I'm a little surprised. Obviously, he's a Virginia guy and a Virginia lifer. I don't doubt that a lot of money was thrown his way by Kentucky. I don't dispute that the SEC is in a better space in college sports right now than the ACC. I am surprised in that I don't think Kentucky's women's basketball coach is definitively a better job than Virginia Tech's. I don't think it provides more pathways to success, more pathways to the tournament. You look at the ACC teams this year who absolutely held their own. Notre Dame, North Carolina, Obviously, Virginia Tech, it's a powerhouse conference. You don't lack for elite competition. Certainly understand that the SEC has LSU and has national powerhouse teams, South Carolina. You know, it may be all SEC or two SEC teams standing in the Final Four for sure. There's reasons to make the move. It surprises me, though. And I got the sense Kenny Brooks had the resources he needed at Virginia Tech and was taken care of there. From the Virginia Tech side, from the Hokies side, it's not easy to find a Kenny Brooks. It's not easy to find a coach who can make a run like that. 20 wins in seven seasons, four straight NCAA tournament appearances. It's going to be a tough job, right? We always talk about that with Tech when they're hiring football coaches. It's tough to recruit kids to Blacksburg, period, full stop. It's a great place. I love every trip I take down to Blacksburg. I love the community. I love the mountains. I love the vibe. But there's not a lot of homegrown talent there, right? Generally speaking, you're recruiting talent from elsewhere, and certainly true in the women's basketball world as well. You need to recruit Richmond, and you need to recruit North Carolina, and you need to recruit internationally to have success there. So that's going to be an interesting development to watch here over the coming days. Kenny Brooks leaving Virginia Tech. Your breaking news this morning on 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. Kenny Brooks, who I think has an incredibly bright future ahead of him. What he did at Virginia Tech certainly will not be forgotten anytime soon, and has put them in a position as well to get a good coach, to get a coach who's got mid-major or even major experience and bring them into Blacksburg and sell them on a place that has responded to women's basketball, that has sold out the castle, that has done great things in the past few years. So Kenny Brooks leaving Virginia Tech, he'll become the coach at the University of Kentucky. We'll have more on that as that develops. I'm sure we'll hear from him at an introductory press conference in Kentucky. Definitely throws into question, right? Obviously, Liz Kittley's not coming back. She's done. Georgia Amor has the COVID year available. Probably throws into doubt whether or not she'd use that at Virginia Tech, but that's all speculation for now. We'll continue to keep an eye on the situation down in Blacksburg. All right. I do want to get to the St. Bonaventure clip because the Bonnies were declined an NIT invitation, but didn't tell their fans that. They just, you know, went on with their business. It wasn't assumed that the Bonnies would make the NIT, and so when they didn't make the NIT, you know, nobody thought anything of it. Then ESPN shows a graphic during the first NIT game that says St. Bonaventure declined an NIT invitation. The fans are mad. Of course the fans are mad. They want to play more basketball. Same as VCU fans would have been mad if they had declined an invitation, which they didn't. St. Bonaventure's athletic director resigned on Monday, Joe Manhertz, who had only been in the job for about 2.5 years, and now St. Bonaventure's president, Jeff Gingrich, I don't know the St. Bonaventure president, we'll say Gingrich, Dr. Jeff Gingrich, has put out, this is like a very formal statement, he's like in the suit and tie, he's in the room with the St. Bonaventure seal behind him, he is addressing the fan base about this NIT debacle. Here we go.
I know many of you are upset with the events that transpired last week regarding the NIT. Quite frankly, I am too. I know how passionate you are about this place and that the Bonnies are a major source of that affection. I knew that 3 months before I even started as president when I attended the NIT Final Four in New York in 2022 and saw nothing but a sea of brown and white every time I turned around. You should have been informed of the team's decision about the NIT on Sunday evening, not 3 days later. The fans of most of the other 16 teams on that ESPN graphic could not have cared less, but they aren't Bonnies.
Ooh, that's a heater right there. That is a full-on let's heave a dude under the bus. I got a lot of questions here. After the NIT bid was declined, Manhertz put out a statement. This is the athletic director who's gotten fired. He cited travel logistics, injuries, and the uncertainty of players potentially entering the portal. Now, I want to know, were the coaches consulted? Were the players consulted? Clearly, the fans are hot. The fans are hot. They're not getting that sweet, sweet NIT action. We've got a full-on statement from the school president about that, which is crazy to me. The school president is having to tamp down an NIT controversy. The A-10, baby, it just means more. I love it. We'll be following that story. We'll keep our finger on that. We'll bring that up. And Kenny Brooks leaving. We got a lot to crosstalk with our guy, AWOD, here on the other side of this break. We're wrapping things up, sending it over to AWOD Radio at noon. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. It's a Tuesday. It's 11:45. We didn't get a chance to do this yesterday. I was out sick. It's good to be back in the saddle here. Be back in the studio tomorrow. Just making sure. Crossing all the dotting the I's, crossing the T's, whatever the order is. I used to work with words for a living. But we do welcome in our guy, Adam Epstein, AWOD Radio, for a little crosstalk. Adam, what is up, dude?
What's going on, Michael? Yeah, breaking news. Kenny Brooks headed to Kentucky, and it just felt like the timing was right with Elizabeth Kitley moving on and the team going down in the second round there of the women's NCAA tournament. And, you know, I do wish Kenny Brooks the best, and I think this is the best for him. Like, Hokies fans are never going to be able to accept this because they think Blacksburg is the place to be. And, you know, it may be for football, but for women's basketball, I do think it's a good move for him to go to Kentucky, and I could see him coaching the U.S. women's national team, and I could see him winning multiple titles at Kentucky, you know, and being a staple of college basketball on the women's side of things, sort of like how Geno does it at UConn there. So I do think this is the best move for Kenny Brooks' career, and I want to say he's been great every time he's come on this show, and it's been great to cover his teams the last few years.
Yeah, at 55 years old, he's got a lot of coaching ahead of him, a lot of basketball ahead of him.
He can retire and come back to Blacksburg in 15 years. They would love to have him back.
Oh, no question. I feel like it's not a great time or spot for Tech, in that, you know, this next year is going to be a rebuilding year, and now you've got to do it with a new coach. Puts a lot of pressure on Whit Babcock to make the right hire here.
Yeah, no, it's very important.
Absolutely. But we do wish Kenny Brooks the best. Absolutely. No contentiousness there. Not a contentious exit. What he did for the whole state. JMU fans still grateful for what he did there. And, of course, what he did to put Virginia Tech on the map. We do very much wish him the best at Kentucky. And we'll keep...
Michael, the only thing that is really interesting is the quote that did come out before the Marshall game, where Kenny Brooks said, "I have not spoken with anybody else, and my focus is on, you know, obviously the Marshall game." And I think it's pretty obvious that he kind of danced around the answer, which was, yeah, he's spoken with Kentucky. He's gotten the offer. He just had not accepted it to that point.
Yeah, we could go play the word. He danced around. He didn't lie. He was very careful in the wording. Too careful, right? I played that on the air. I was like, that dude's gone to Kentucky. But you know, you can't blame him. These things get lined up ahead of time. You know, Mark Byington leaving the Dukes as well. It's coaching search season all around Virginia. All right, AWOD's here. We're doing some crosstalk. Let's hit that sweet, sweet sounder, Hazel.
Two hosts enter.
Let's get it on right now, all right?
Two hosts will also leave, but in between, all bets are off. This is Crosstalk with MP and AWOD.
Okay, let's get this show on the road.
You know, diving back into this for a second, too, it's an opportunity for UVA, which was, you know, top of the hill in women's basketball in this state for a long time, them and Old Dominion. But, you know, under Debbie Ryan, they ran the show. They haven't done that in probably two decades. You saw under Coach Mox, they had that win against Virginia Tech. It's an interesting time, right? It's a chance for them to maybe eat it a little bit of that pie that Virginia Tech's been having to themselves.
Yeah, were you reading, because I was reading earlier, and I can't remember the guy's name, but the Virginia Tech had an assistant coach that they thought was lined up to take over, but he just got an offer, like, in the last few days. Did you hear about that, too?
Yeah, I don't remember where he went, but Virginia Tech did lose an assistant coach as well to a different head coaching guy. You got to think, though, from the Kenny Brooks quote we played last week, where it was like, "Kentucky, I don't know what you're talking about, ha, ha, ha." Mm-hmm. Like, surely that guy knew whether or not the Virginia Tech job would be available and whether it would be. I can't imagine anybody leaving, going to Kenny to tell him, "Hey, I'm leaving," and Kenny not being like, "Yo, dude, like, chill out for 3 minutes here and it's yours." That's just my read from 1,000 feet away on the situation here.
Yeah, I just don't know if you can wait, right? Like, if somebody gives you an offer and you know that Kenny Brooks is leaving when the season ends, well, when does the season end, right? Because the Hokies were supposed to win that game the other night. They were the higher seed. And I get it, they were out with Liz Kittley. But if you're the assistant, you can't say, oh, I got to wait till the end of this season if you're getting an offer right now. So, you know, that's what's so interesting about the movement in college basketball with all the coaches. Like, I'm fired up for Duquesne, right? Keith Dambrot retires. They're going to bring in Drew Joyce III, who was LeBron James's teammate in high school. And so I really like that move right there to hire the assistant to become the head coach there. And so it's really interesting what's going on with college basketball right now.
I would love to get a hot stove season if we could just, and it'll never happen, right? Because nobody's in charge of college sports. Everybody just looks out for themselves. I get that. if the season ends, we have the national title game. 2 days later, hot stove season begins. That's when you can make coaching moves. That's when you can make transfer portal moves. Gives us a whole nother month of talking about it and juice, and it's not overlapping with the biggest event, you know, in all of basketball for this month. I don't know that there's a good way to do that, but I'd love to see that happen somehow.
I mean, there's a problem with college basketball with the transfer portal. I mean, all the rumors kind of came true with the A-10 George Mason's best player, Keyshawn Hall, right? We were talking about, why is he sitting out with a weird ankle injury that came out of nowhere the end of the season, didn't play much in Brooklyn, and then he announced the transfer portal yesterday, and he's also going to try out for the NBA draft. That's the interesting thing also, right? You can try out for the NBA draft, but while also keeping 1 year of eligibility and entering the transfer portal. So basically, you go work out in front of NBA scouts, and then they're going to tell you, well, you need to be on a national stage this year. Why don't you go to a bigger program?
Yeah, it's a problem, and I don't see a solution coming, which is disappointing for everybody involved. Did you hear the St. Bonaventure president giving his like hostage room speech about the NIT?
I'm not sure that was the St. Bonaventure president, or that was just an AI robot, because... I mean, my goodness. Like, do we have the clip to run it back again? He did not sound like a real person at all.
Hazel, run it back, but just run it back for about 10 seconds here, just so we can hear the voice.
It's so embarrassing.
It really is. Like, they fed ChatGPT that we have an NIT controversy, and this is what ChatGPT gave back in response.
Oh, and it's the actual voice of ChatGPT, too.
I know many of you are upset with the events that transpired last week regarding the NIT. Quite frankly, I am too. I know how passionate you are about this place and that the Bonnies are a major source of that affection.
All right, that's enough right there. Like, how does that sound human at all? And that the Bonnies are a major source of affection.
I know basketball is important because my Google searching tells me that you humans like to watch basketball.
The other weird thing about St. Bonaventure, didn't it come out that they weren't even invited to the NIT? The whole controversy is just about them turning it down without an invite?
They turned it down before they were invited. We don't know if they would have been invited or not. They turned it down.
I think it's pretty obvious that they weren't invited when VCU barely made it and we were better than the Bonnies, right?
Well, yeah, but you know, so much, right? Like UVA got the nod over Pitt probably because they beat them twice. The Bonnies did beat VCU twice. So I don't think it's unthinkable the committee would have said, that's the team we got to take instead of the other team. Like, I don't think it was unthinkable they would have gotten invited. But it is unquestionable to me VCU got invited for sure because the Bonnies declined. Like that kicked us into the spot for sure.
Yeah.
Awad joining us for a little crosstalk. We played the clips earlier, broke it down. JJ McCarthy's now in the mix at number two. You give any credence to any of this?
JJ McCarthy is in the mix, not at number two, but because the Commanders might trade back. And I've been pushing this for the last few weeks here. I'm trade up or bust. Meaning, do everything you can to get Caleb Williams.
You're up
if you
for Caleb.
Then trade back and acquire as many draft picks as possible and go get, you know, Joe Alt or the best offensive lineman available or a Marvin Harrison and then try to get a quarterback later. I just think that there's a talent gap between one and the rest of the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I've kind of thrown in the towel on the Caleb Williams thing. It just feels like the Bears also know there's a gap between one and all the other picks, and they're sitting on it. Like trading, making that trade for what was it, a sixth round pick? I'm trying to think. With Pittsburgh, that would, I mean, that to me was the indication, right? We're doing this at all costs, because you don't make 100%. That trade if there's any chance you think you're not taking a quarterback. I'm intrigued, but I also wonder how far can you go down? Can you go past four? I don't think you can go past four and still get one of these guys necessarily guaranteed.
Oh, I don't know about that. You think J.J. McCarthy could go fourth?
I just wonder, if I think the Cardinals will take Marvin Harrison. But if they don't, and they trade the pick to somebody who needs a quarterback, right? You got the Vikings trying to move up. You got the Broncos trying to move up. You got all these teams jockeying for position. If somebody says, hey, we got to get a quarterback, I think they got to get to four to make it happen.
It certainly makes sense, because there's going to be a run on quarterbacks. There is every year. I just feel like the run stops at three. I'm pretty confident about that.
I love Marvin Harrison just in a vacuum. He's the number one prospect. I love what he brings to the table for sure. All right, we'll pick this back up with AWOD in about 15 minutes, a little crosstalk during AWOD Radio. He's with you noon to 3. Appreciate you guys joining us for the show today. If you missed anything, grab the Odyssey app. It's free. It's got the rewind button. We're back tomorrow. Full 2 hours tomorrow, breaking down all the action and whatever news pops today, because we had a full slate today. That was pretty exciting. Back tomorrow with more. This is 910 The Fan at 105.1 FM.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.